everyone, and welcome back to Rebook, the show where we talk about the big meaty men and women who be slapping all the meat and the stories they tell in the process, brother. I'm, of course, GB. I'm the guy who's going to be yapping all day, pushing the buttons. You also have the drama king himself. It's TNA's Matthew Raywalt. And we also have the legend himself, Jake the Brain Bennett. Oh, he's asleep. Never mind. It's early, actually. Yeah, wake up, damn it. It is early for us because we're recording this on Wednesday morning. We usually release on Wednesday. We will be releasing today, so don't get it twisted. It's just that we've been busy.
They're not listening right now, you know.
That is true. You know what it is?
Have to reassure them.
I'm so used to working live that, like, every time I speak, I feel like I'm always speaking to a live audience. We will be, you know, we were just a little busy, right? We had a lot of stuff going on, a lot of things going down, and it's been rather hectic. I just came back from New York for Red Bull Home Ground, which is super fun. Got to work the Hammerstein Ballroom, which was like a little bucket list item for me that I never thought I'd be able to do. Yeah. So that was really, really dope. And we want to also remind everyone that if you are tuning in to this incredible show and you happen to enjoy listening to us on YouTube or I don't know, Apple Podcasts, maybe Spotify, who knows? No, people don't like them these days. Maybe Pandora, I don't know. Why don't you go ahead and check us out at rebookpod.com. This way you get updated on all the stuff, all the things that we do, you know? And this way you can follow us. We also have some fan comments, fans coming in hot. Wanted to share their thoughts. Fan mail from last week's episode. Rashi105 says, WWE really needs to do something big. Emphasis on big to top AEW's Blood and Guts, but judging by the teams that are stacked for WWE, it's gonna be mid at best. Fellas, do you agree?
I would. When we're gonna talk about this in today's episode of the art of story versus spectacle. Spoiler alert: the theme of the week. I think this week this past week the big spectacle of Brock coming back and Roman coming back, I think will bring hype and eyeballs. Yeah. But will the match and the story be the same as good as AEW's in fans' eyes? I don't know.
That'll interesting.
Be but I would argue that they are trying to do something big.
Yeah.
Involving those level of, stars and star power and stuff.
Do you feel like, Jake, this has the makings of being a mid Survivor Series at best? I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that.
I think it could, but I don't think it has anything to do with the people involved in the match.
Okay.
I think that a lot of that's up to the decisions made in the back before they ever even come out.
That's fair.
It's also a weird comparison because, again, we kind of sometimes forget, and maybe this is a compliment to AEW, to be fair. You're comparing essentially a special episode of Dynamite to a big four pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, I would argue that the hype and the eyeballs and everything is big for Survivor Series. But the fact that people are even having the conversation of this special edition Wednesday episode versus WWE's, if anybody's at all, even if you're the most AEW-pilled person ever, if you're having that conversation and comparison, that means that the event of Blood and Guts is seen as a big deal in at least AEW's fans' eyes and a lot of other wrestling fans.
You know what? I would agree with that. I think and also I think it is a testament and kudos to AEW on, building this over the course of these last couple of years and kind of cementing. I do wonder if they should make it into its own pay-per-view or if it's good in this spot. I kind of like it in the show spot. I don't like it as a pay-per-view, but I could see the argument for Blood and Guts being a pay-per-view, right?
I could too.
Right? Like, it makes sense. All right, well, we got some more comments. This one, I mean, I know Jake's a huge fan of Mercedes Moné's Ultima belt collector arc, but Hit Run Tony, longtime member of the show, says, I feel like with them saying that anyone can win the national championship, maybe it will turn into like the 24/7 title, or maybe this is just another belt for Mercedes Moné to win. I honestly wouldn't... I wouldn't be mad in that if that was the case. If Mercedes won the belt, it would be perfectly fine with me, purely because I don't want the belt to begin with. So if that's the case, go ahead, do whatever the hell you want with it.
I'm at the point, if she wears like a leather belt to keep her pants up, I'm upset because it's too many. Like, it can be a Kohl's $15 special belt.
Also, the absolute lack of dedication to wearing all the belts at the same time.
Really, it's troubling. It really
is. It's upsetting.
It's upsetting. There's no reason.
It's a lot.
She should be pulling a Joey heavy from Friends and just
heavy. Heavy is the head.
That's right. Heavy is the head. Exactly. That wears all the belts. So that's what we think she should do. Mercedes, get on it. All right. Stop using the jobbers to peddle your wares or get it on you. All right. And then another comment. So, if you watch on YouTube, we've been posting a scan. We'll sometimes post like some questions or like some surveys and stuff. And moving forward, I'm going to pull some of these into the episode so that, you know, if you ask something funny or you know, something particularly pops up that we think could be good to talk about, we'll bring it into the show. So if you see those on YouTube, make sure you're participating in them. And we'll make sure that whenever we post these on YouTube, like these polls and questions and whatever, we'll also include them in our Discord too. I just thought about that. I think that would be a good idea so people could know that we're posting this stuff, because, you know, algorithms suck and they always try and hide crap. That being said, the question that Scan had asked was, and this is one I'd like to pose to both of you as well, first wrestling match you ever saw? And this is a toughie because, you know, there are a lot of great matches and a lot of them stick in your head as like the first one. But I'm curious, what was the first one you ever saw? We had the wrestling group responded and said Hulk Hogan versus Big Boss Man steel cage match, Saturday night's main event, 1989, via videotape some years later, want to say around 96. I do remember that match. It was the blue cage, if I'm correct, right? It's when they were running the blue cage back then. What about you guys? You remember your first match at all? Like, that's a toughie.
That is tough.
Because I want to say, for me, the one I remember, I want to say is my first match, but the one I remember the fondest was Undertaker versus Undertaker. Doppelganger match.
We're talking about the first one you saw in person or
on TV?
I'm just saying in general. I think the first, your first taste of professional wrestling, you know, when, if you can remember when that was.
So,
or one that sticks out to you the fondest, maybe, if that's easier.
I don't know if this, because I had like my brothers watched it, I know, but I wasn't really aware of it because like my dad would take them to the Rosemont Horizon, now the Allstate Arena, back in the day in like the early 90s, but I was too young. So I knew they were like, it was on occasionally in the house. I knew who like Hulk Hogan was in the early 90s, all that stuff, but I never saw it. And it wasn't until the Attitude Era that all of my friends in school would talk about it. So I had to seek it out. Never had cable TV, so I didn't have a lot of access to it. However, I always tell this in interviews, Shotgun Saturday Night.
Oh, yeah.
Which was on a local channel and was just like, it would be Raw recap, like for 40 minutes, and then like a random ass taped match.
Yeah.
So like, I couldn't tell you what, but it was probably one of three people: Steve Blackman, Al Snow, or S.A. Rios, in some combination of them wrestling each other, was probably what I saw as like my first like sit down, I have it in front of me, I found it on my own match in like 1998 or something like
that. Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. And three fun wrestlers, man. I used to love Steve Blackman. I always thought him coming out doing the nunchuck crap, you know, like
Lethal Weapon, baby.
Yeah, it was so great. I love that. Jake, what about for you?
I'm having a hard time remembering like my first, just like the first match I ever saw.
Well,
like
how about one that sticks out to you? Is there one that?
Well, one that sticks out to me, I have addressed on this program before, which is Doink v. Crush.
I knew it.
Yes,
at WrestleMania 9, because I had rented the tape from a Blockbuster to watch it.
So So great.
Now, if we were going back to like the first live match that I remember seeing, I can tell you one competitor and where it was. I saw Iron Sheik.
Yes.
Wrestle after a Huntsville Stars minor league baseball game in like 1994.
Nice.
Wow.
And I think, yeah. And I think that's the first one that I remember.
Damn, that's
because
cool.
he was also there. I remember he was there during the game, like back by concessions, and he had those big clubs.
Yeah. What were the name of them? Clubs I forget the name of it, but I know it because that was his thing, right? Because it was like an exercise. Yes.
Oh, those are
just like nobody could do them but him.
They were there. It's like a weight training thing. They're super heavy.
Yeah.
I believe it's like it might be Iranian. I think it is. Like the Iranian, literally Iranian clubs or something.
Yeah.
The Iranian club.
Yeah. The Persian club challenge.
Yep. Is what it was called. Persian club. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Dude, that sounds hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had them there, and you could try to pick them up and spin them or just pick them up. But yeah, first one I remember in person, I think.
That's cool.
Was just a random Iron Sheik match with after a minor league baseball game.
And I mean, and that sometimes wrestling finds you at the best places. You know, truly does. Right. That's awesome. Let us know in the comments. We'll read a couple next week. What was your first? You can remember. It doesn't have to be your first, but you know, because honestly, it's kind of impossible to remember, right? So much wrestling. We'll love to hear from it. And also some variations too. What was your, I don't know, the first like women's match you watched? What was the first tag match you watched? What was your favorite match or whatever? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And as well, if you want to also share that, well, maybe we'll make a section in our Discord. It's like question of the day or question of the week or something like that, and people can just go ahead and pop off in the Discord. But yeah, join the Discord. We have a great community over there, and we'd love to hear from you. So thank you so much, everyone who responds. And of course, if you happen to enjoy the show, make sure you give it a like. You can also subscribe. You can check us out across all the different podcast platforms. We're available everywhere. And yeah, thank you all so much for joining us on this ride. Now, let's go ahead and talk about some wrestling, shall we? Lots of stuff.
Great.
Lots of stuff happened.
What the fuck did TNA do?
Yeah, let's start with TNA, shall we? Because this week, what we're going to be doing, Matt, you alluded to it earlier, is story versus spectacle is what we're going to be talking about here. Because we were trying to approach talking about this stuff differently rather than just recapping things. Want to find these themes, and these central themes do exist across a lot of these different promotions. One of the big things right now, and one of the reasons why we made the show, is because there's been such an emphasis on story and writing and just making sure that, like, you know, what's happening in the ring makes sense and yada yada yada. And we're kind of in a weird place right now. Right. Where, like, people are, you know, they're trying new things. Right? Some people are thriving. Some people are kind of floundering. Some people are doing questionable stuff. So we figured we'd start with the one who's doing the questionable stuff first, which, you know, it was a bit jarring. So TNA has been off TV for a couple of weeks now, ever since Bound for Glory, Mike Santana defeated Trick Williams, ending the era of Trick and A, becoming the new TNA world champion. And he comes out, says he's going to be a fighting champion, and then he loses it. Not in a match. Frankie Kazarian calls his shot, right?
Right, yes.
It was Mike Santana versus Ryan Nemeth, if I'm correct. Yep. And they were fighting. And then... out of nowhere, NXT people just started swarming the stage after Nick Nemeth apparently was going to try and cash in his call your shot. Because remember, Frankie and Nick have both the call your shot thing. Mm-hmm. And they were just attacked by some random assailant, you know, just some physical assault. It's okay, right? It happens. Some crimes were committed. It's fine.
Yeah.
Some breaking and entering, you know what I mean? And then out of nowhere, all these NXT people just swarm the ring and beat the shit out of Mike Santana. Then in the hummabubub of all of that, Frankie Kazarian called a shot and is now the new TNA world champion. First title defense, technically. I'm going to save Matt's reaction for later, just because I, you know, Matt's lived it. So let's let's me and Jake kind of talk about this. Jake, I know you wanted to pop off on it, so mi amigo, the floor is yours.
Is Triple H booking the Puerto Ricans in TNA too?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, bro. Us Latinos can't get a break, man.
I mean, like this is like if Cody lost the title after like at Backlash,
yeah,
after WrestleMania 40. Like,
it does feel like that. Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to play a little devil's advocate on this. I kind of see what it is that they're trying to like do here. And I think for me, at least, and I could be wrong, but I think like what it is really just trying to emphasize that there are a lot of sharks in the water of TNA. And that, like, anyone at any point in time truly can be the TNA world champion. My only gripe with this is that it kind of
did it at the benefit, like, you did it, at, like, to the most over guy.
Yeah, like, this should have been
arguably on the roster.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like I'm fine Frankie Kazarian winning the TNA world title. That does not bother me.
No, I don't have a problem with that either.
We were calling him to hold the belt.
Months ago.
I think that where I have issue with it, it's like it made Santana, after all this stuff that he dealt with, it just made him seem a little bit like a chump, like a fool. But I'm kind of curious where this goes still, regardless, because it's happened and we have to live with it. But that's my take. I'm seeing it, but I'm also not like happy about it.
But what are you seeing?
Well, I kind of feel like with Nick Nemeth, with Frankie Kazarian, they're kind of like illustrating that there's just a lot of threats in TNA, and that anyone can win the title at any point in time, which is literally what happened, right? But like, I wouldn't be shocked, because remember, Nick still has his call your shot. So Don't be surprised if in a couple weeks Nick Nemeth is the world champion, and then we end up in a triple threat match between Nick, Frankie, and Mike Santana, and that belt is just moving around a little bit. Which, in a world where titles, where championship titles, especially men's world titles, are kind of sticking on the person for at least like 6 to 7 months, it's cool to take a different route, I guess, and do it differently. I don't know. Is this cope? Maybe it could be. Matt, what's your read on it?
So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm honestly in a place where, like, I want to help put this company up and over, like, and I believe in everybody there. And So this was this begins our discussion, right? And then of story versus spectacle. And I think we and TNA tried to thread that needle a little bit by doing, you know, coming off of a month of, we were on the air, by the way, everyone's like, you're off. We were, because I want to give credit to our studio team who did 4 weeks of edited taped shows. And yes, everybody wants to be in the arena, but like, I just, our team back at the studio is so awesome that I hate it when people are like, they took a month off. It's like,
yeah,
the talent didn't wrestle. And that's the ideal God forbid, form of entertainment.
People get a fucking break, by the way.
But that said, like everybody wanted to be doing shows, et cetera, like that. So like, I just love our production team. So the fact that they edited together these shows every single week, that documentary came out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I just want to shout them out real quick. But to be fair, after being off of in-arena shows, not even a chance to kind of have a live in-arena celebration for Mike Santana and stuff, it was a bold move to 4 weeks later after our biggest record-breaking show. I believe the idea, and like I always say, like I have way less information than you all think. Like I kind of know as I get to the shows each loop. But coming off of that, off of a quiet period that nobody wanted, the high, the people up on high deigned, there was Not a place to do live shows, whatever. Not my, above my pay grade. So we come back, and I think this was, there was an idea of like, how do we jumpstart something, right? That little like, good, bad, or indifferent, let's go for the shock factor.
Yeah.
And then I think you can also, I again, don't know, but heading into 2026, our next big pay-per-view, we imagine there's going to be some announcements about where we are in 2026, stuff mm-hmm. like that, right? Big things at the beginning of the year. Maybe it's more exciting to kind of have a good guy fighting back to his title come that time. Sure. That's my logic without being told that. However, I agree kind of with Jake. This is not how, if I had the pencil, as they say, I would have done it. I think there are other ways you could ramp up. I do think maybe the NXT kind of invasion thing could still have happened with Mike leading the charge as champion. And as you could tell, I don't think I'm spilling any tea here. Like the NXT stars that broke in, they're not the world champions and everything like that. And yeah. I think we're going to tell that story in the next couple of weeks of like, these are people who are tired of not getting opportunities, have chips on their shoulder, or have been overlooked by their own brand. And we're this set of tapings is in Orlando, their backyard. So there is a little meat, you know, there's a little bit of meat on that bone.
Yeah.
But and I think most people would agree with UGB and everybody here, like, it's not Frankie winning it. It's how it happened. Yeah. It's also, Full Sail is a wonderful venue, but it's also one of the smaller crowds we get because its capacity limit is very small. So to have a major thing like that kind of in front of a crowd who didn't know how to react. And so it's quiet and it's weird. So like, it was an awkward feeling thing. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. So while I see where maybe some of the idea of where to take this and where to go, this is what I mean by like threading that needle, like the spectacle of the shock change. But I think there's a story attempted to being told. It wasn't how I would have written it out.
Yeah.
But I know how damn good Frankie is. I know how damn good Mike is. You know, throw Nick in there if and when you want him. Like the talent is there. The raw, I said this, the raw material is there. I do think we need a more eloquently written tale for these really strong personas.
On that note, and I think there's a couple, one big takeaway I should say rather is like, I understand the idea of coming back with something that is very jarring because it does hook you. Right. I think that the problem in this particular instance is that TNA has had a history of doing these like very odd things that you're like, you didn't need to take that risk right now. That wasn't all that necessary. And I'm from the discourse that I was seeing with people, that was kind of like the position a lot of people have where it's like, oh, here they come doing TNA things again. But I think that this was always going to be an inevitability no matter what, because like given how tumultuous and crazy that whole call your shot situation was, you had two guys walking around the company with the ability to cash in on a champion, on the champion, whenever they wanted. This kind of makes sense given the absurdity of that situation. You know, that it's like, oh, okay, this could have gone that way. And also, too, like, when you think about who would have stepped up to challenge Mike Santana for the title post Bound for Glory, post the Trick-N-A arc, right? Like, we already had an NXT guy going after the title and or holding the title and NXT, you know, circling the title for like such a long time now. So it is nice that the people who are circling the title aren't TNA people at all. Aren't NXT people. It's TNA people. Yes. I can't, words and acronyms. Good Lord. So it's nice that the people who are surrounding the title right now are TNA wrestlers and not NXT wrestlers. I feel like that is the positive of this situation. Sure. And it's going to get these three guys who, and also Steve Macklin as well, let's not forget him, is going to get these guys who really are, you know, like at this point, like the faces of TNA, right? The guys of TNA. This is their, these are the guys that they're leaning on right now. And, yeah. And I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with that. Jake, anything?
No.
Or sorry, go for it.
That, yeah, no, that is a, I think that is a positive, and that you'll hear me even on commentary say that, you know, is like, hey, at the, there's nobody more TNA than Frankie Kazarian. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And so I was just had this thought. I'm like, if Mike Santana had won at Slammiversary, and had been holding that title, defending it, going through whatever. And then this same exact schedule played out. Mm. We had a big match at BFG, big show. And then same thing, a month not doing shows in arena. And then you kind of did the same thing. I think people would have forgiven it much more.
Yeah.
But the idea that the culmination and then kind of radio silence, and then the first time you poke your head up, it's a wild, out of left field move.
Yeah,
I think it was overkill.
Like, it's like I had a one night stand with the most beautiful woman, and then I wake up the next morning and she's gone and stolen my wallet.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, yeah, I can see, like, where you're going.
Like, that's how it feels. Like, I'm all for taking big swings. Just swing at pitches near the strike zone.
Mm.
Like, let's not just swing and whiff at everything that's thrown at us from the mound. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah.
Like I felt like, because I don't think you're going to have the same, you're not going to have the same reaction from the crowd if and when he wins it back. I just don't think you are. Sure. Like, because that was this moment that had been building and building and building and building.
There's no time like and the then, first time.
No, no, to stick with that. Yeah. to stick with my, didn't my even previous analogy. Connection. Yeah. I just, like, imagine if it had been like you said, where he had won it, you know, at Slammiversary, and then what if Frankie wins it at Turning Point? Then you go away a month, then you come back, and then he loses it. Now that kind of works for Frankie Kazarian, but I don't think it works for Santana. Like, I don't know. It feels like there are other ways we could have swung for the fences instead of at the benefit of your hottest baby face.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. I see both of the, you know, the angles of frustration, but also curiosity. There is, look, at the end of the day, we're talking about Nick Nemeth, Frankie Kazarian, and Mike Santana circling around the TNA World Championship. It's going to be good. Like, I am not questioning. I have no doubt in my mind that this is going to end up, and we're going to look back on it and be like, phew, crazy start, but my God, I'm so glad they landed that plane. Like, I have faith. I have confidence purely because of the people that are involved. Like, I'm really big on Nick Nemeth. Yeah. In the ring, specifically in the ring, but also them as performers. I think, like, them as performers can make this story really stick, or make this really stick wherever it goes. And again, we don't really know where this is going. But surely we have to come to the conclusion that there's going to be another cash in, and Frankie Kazarian might not be TNA World Champion for a long time.
Very possible.
And I'm excited for that. You know, I a little hot potato after the title had been on someone consistently for such a long time isn't necessarily a bad thing. But I do agree with you that it coming off of the backs of your most popular guy, your most over guy, and, you know, him doing that. But unlike Joe Hendry, where it kind of felt like if they didn't put the belt on him, then when the hell would they do it? I do feel like Mike Santana will be a multi-time TNA world champion. So this is just a, this is just going to be one of many. But on the story, though, or rather on the topic of spectacle and story, you know, because we were discussing, you know, I think, Matt, you had kind of hit the nail on the head in the descriptor for each one. Let's go to AEW, I think, because they're an interesting spot, because depending on who you ask, obviously, but we try and view wrestling in a very, like, you know, I like to think we view it in a very unbiased, like, just we're just enjoying the product, the show, and analyzing it for what it is, and also kind of seeing where the stories go from there. One of the things that we've kind of noticed is that AEW storytelling has gotten exponentially better from the way it was back then, where it was a lot of like random matches, didn't really feel like it had much in the way of substance or growth. And then now, like, there's characters with long-term stories, there's conflict, there's you know, a lot of lore, right? Like, you look back at the Darby Allin John Moxley story and how long that has gone, and how much they've built off of that, or even on the women's side with what they've done with like Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa and like their friendship and all these different little aspects, all these different little story bits. Are we feeling like right now they are hitting all the notes the way that you would want them to? Where can they improve? What's the read, I guess, on your guys' end? Who wants to kick it off here?
I think AEW likes to, I don't know, sometimes it feels like their focus isn't necessarily long-term storytelling, but it's kind of storytelling in the moment. And I'm not saying that there haven't been situations where they haven't done long-term storytelling. There is. And one thing that they're actually, I think, pretty good at too is character continuity, as far as who feels what.
I agree with
regarding certain other members of the roster. So I think that they're very good at that. They have a good memory when it comes to those things. But I don't know. Sometimes, like I said, it just feels like they just kind of are feeling it out in the moment of like, okay, well, let's go where this heat is, and let's tease this a little bit and see how people feel feel about that. But like, I think you saw some good storytelling, like in the women's Blood and Guts, especially with Mina and Tony, and honestly with a lot of the other people involved too. I mean, there were a lot of little side stories or little things set up. But it's a matter of like, are those going to set up kind of something more long-term or on a bigger scale? I don't know, because it feels like we rarely have these long-term stories unless it's involving like the main titles.
Mm. Yeah.
It's kind of how it feels sometimes. But I think that they're doing a better job. I think that they are kind of at the other end of the spectrum from TNA as far as like taking those risks. I think their risks are more calculated sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're smaller risks to be like, okay, let's do this and let's see how that works.
Well, even like Powerhouse Hobbs versus Hangman was a good example, right? Because it's like, mm-hmm. you really want to emphasize, like, you know, they made a big change, the ops now being, right. you know, from good guy to bad guy. It was a little bit of a sudden change, but, you know, and you have the talent like Samoa Joe could just go out there and explain like why they don't want to. And then you're completely believing it, right? But then they're like, okay, well, now we got to also get Hobbs and get Shibata and get them in integrated into this. And I thought they did a really good job, at least with Hobbs. I'm curious to see what they do with Shibata, because a lot of people like Shibata. Like, what do they do? Like, what they did with Hobbs here was had him just come out back in his like monster arc. Like, it does feel like they're rebuilding Hobbs, because let's not forget, he kind of just got inserted into this because Hook got injured. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. excuse me, even with that, it's like I have a read on it that could be wrong, but I'm curious what you guys think. I feel like in the instance of TNA, they have a lot of great talent that they're figuring out what to do with right now. I feel like mm-hmm. in AEW, they have a lot of great talent that they know what to do with, and they're taking their time doing it with them. And then on the mm-hmm. WWE side of things, they have a lot of great talent, but they don't really know where to take the stories for them. You know, like each promotion right. has great talent, but it's the direction that they're like you could see it. I don't know, that could be a misread on my part, but
I think a lot of what AEW does is more, I think they do more character driven storytelling than plot driven storytelling.
Okay. Explain if you don't mind.
I'll give you an example. I think one of the biggest stories is that Jon Moxley is a bitch.
Yeah. I like that.
Jon Moxley cannot be in a submission move. He just can't. He cannot stand it. He taps out given the first opportunity. And I think that that is a fascinating, interesting character flaw that has become part of a storyline. Mm. And I think that that's going to be Jon Moxley's ultimate downfall. I think we're possibly going to be seeing the Death Riders move on without Moxley, because yeah. Mox could not back up his mouth in Blood and Guts because he tapped out again.
Yeah.
That's an interesting character flaw or an interesting characteristic about the wrestler Jon Moxley that we have created into a story. And that is what I mean by character driven. You know, it's these things, it's the decisions and the actions of the characters what's driving the plot forward, as opposed to things just happening to these wrestlers that they have to deal
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
And I think AEW has been very good with that. Look at the stuff, but that's why I'm like, it feels like AEW does a good job of making stories that draw you to the character, and that's what holds you long term. Because like even when Hangman was on his path trying to win the AEW championship, that was all very character driven stuff too. The story was about his personal redemption, right? And him, you know, trying to right the wrongs of his past, if you will, to become the man that he needed to be. That is super character driven.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. And that's what draws people more to the wrestlers and holds them there long term.
And all that came from a very heated feud that essentially made two stars in their company with mm-hmm. Hangman and Swerve, most namely Swerve. Right. That they also built off of, right? Because how long yep. has Swerve called himself the most dangerous man in AEW? Man right. literally had the whole fire thing going on for a minute. Like, yeah, like there was a lot of that. I will agree as well with you, Jake, on like the subtle things. Like WWE was like experimenting with this where they were showing like, oh, this backstage, you know, thing here where like these two people were talking. But I felt like AEW is always kind of like, lean on the subtleties like way more without it needing to be so like, oh, it's background in a promo. Like they've just always like,
right.
Like for example, like Hangman's like alcoholism, right? Like they always like, that's always a story of like him needing to, you know, find himself again. And you would see like those moments where like, he would like take a swig back in the day and they're like, oh man, Hangman's getting a little too crazy out there. And, you know, it's like small little details like that, that then like kind of built into the character, long-term added to the,
they're more nuanced. Arc.
Yeah,
I think they're the stories that they tell are more nuanced and focus on these.
And not all of them, to be fair.
Not all of them. But their best ones.
Yeah.
Their best ones tend to
really shine.
Tend to go that way.
What about for you, yeah. Matt? What's your read on?
I mean, echoing a lot of what's already been said, I do think they have gotten much more consistent, to Jake's point. I think they are more consistent in developing characters. I think they've also, and we'll get in more into this with WWE, but like, I think they have a better balance in their roster of development and character and story time for everybody from the top main event to tag teams to, you know, different divisions, the women's mat. Kind of, it feels very evenly split for the most part.
Yeah. I think there could be a little bit more for the women, though. But outside of that, sure. that's my only real gripe.
But I mean, they just got their own blood and freaking guts match in the middle of a first ever women's tag title tournament. They're getting the spotlight pretty heavy, too. And it'll always ebb and flow. But I think overall, like in a given year, I just think everything is pretty well and consistently told. Whereas I think some companies can get... there is no middle class, right? There is no mid-card. Like, there, you have, I think WWE, and we'll get into it, is super stacked on the hot top end. And I think they kind of leave the middle kind of middling.
Yeah, the middle is middling.
For lack of a better word, the middle is middling. Like, inconsistent and people not getting... I feel like AEW does a really good job of trying to develop almost as many people as they can. And I think Jake kind of brought it out at the beginning. I think they take more calculated risks. And I do think they listen of like, hey, if something's clicking, like with the audience, let's roll with it. Yeah. Maybe not huge, but like we'll keep them on TV. We'll give them a big win. We'll give them. And I think some of the other companies can sometimes fight against that or like, don't worry, like, we're telling the story. Don't worry. You'll get with it eventually. Which is fine sometimes if you have a long plan in place, but then other times it's like, hey, we talked about it before. If so and so is hot, you got to go with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you got to just go with them.
It was kind of like how AEW is good at that. Bandido and Brody King, right? When they became tag team partners, right? Like, first match happened, everyone was really stoked. If you would have told me Bandido and Brody King were going to win the tag titles off of that whole thing, I wouldn't have believed you because. It was like this awesome thing where you're like, oh my God, I love Bandido. Oh my God, I love Brody King. Love both of these guys coming together. This is sick. Maybe, but this probably is going to be a setup for like Bandido's next Ring of Honor world title opponent or something like that. Mm-hmm. And no, and then they win the whole damn thing. And the crowd is still very much into them, very much enjoying it. And it's like, there had to have been, like, I don't know if that was always the plan going into it, but there had to have been some thought where it's like, you know what? This actually isn't a bad idea. This is
right.
This is really smart. And now, like, you know, if they drop the titles, which I'm expecting they're going to drop the titles relatively soon. Heck, they may even drop the titles this weekend at Full Gear because they're going up against FTR. Maybe not now, but maybe they drop it like World's End. Who knows? I'm perfectly satisfied with like what we got out of this run, you know, as like a fan of both of these guys. And this is exactly like, I think, kind of leaning into what you were talking about, where it's like they go where the wind blows, maybe sometimes a little too much. Like I think Harley Cameron's a good example of that. Like as much as I love Harley Cameron, her character is sometimes incredibly inconsistent. One minute she's like hanging out with Chris Statlander, best friends with her. Next minute she's Willow's tag team partner. Next minute she's hanging out with Mercedes Moné. It's like a little all over the place, but then it's Harley Cameron.
But that's right. That to me fits the character of Harley Cameron. Like she's just chaos personified. She goes where the wind blows and she doesn't really care where it is.
Random thing I just wanted to point out. It's a little bit of an aside here. We'll get into the WWE topic, but it's just something I noticed. So I'm like flicking through the sites and just like pulling up graphics so we can have like references to talk about. And I go to the AEW roster page and I don't know if you guys have gone, but you know, here you have Okada as unified champion, but then you have Okada as Continental, and then you have Okada as International.
Oh my God!
No, that's obnoxious. Are they gonna keep both of the belts?
Mercedes is about to sue for gimmick infringement.
But that was that's interesting. I can't help but wonder if the unified title is literally just that.
Is that unified title picture, like the way that. Can you bring it back up?
Yeah.
The way that I was like, what a strange pose he's doing there, just holding his hand up. But I realized this, he doesn't know what to do with his other hand because he doesn't have a title on his shoulder.
Yeah, I guess so.
See, in the other two pictures, he's just like, it's just normal thing. But this one, he's holding this invisible orb. It's very Ricky Bobby. I don't know.
We all can't be cool like Bandito, though, with the finger gun. Sorry. Or Kyle Fletcher, who just really wanted to let people know he worked out that day. But yeah, I thought
or Samoa Joe, who seems unsure how to do the Spider-Man
thwick. Spider-Man thwick. Like upside down thwonk.
Yeah, but he's got one finger down.
He doesn't thwick, he thwonks. You know, that's what it is. I just thought that was very interesting. Wonder if they do something with that because we have another belt. Because you know, AEW just got to add more titles all the time. It's also bothering me because it's going to mess up the freaking symmetry of the damn page. You know,
take one of them out. Just take one of them out.
Just please do. I think we all are feeling quite good about AEW right now. Is that safe to say? I is that like I would say like on a rating
generally
like an 8, 7 or an 8 out of 10? Right? Is that how we want to
getting into the theme of like the spectacle story? I think their storytelling has been much better.
How are they on the spectacle side of things?
So that's where, like, for me, like, so there's different kinds of spectacle too. So they don't have the spectacle of what we like to call like the attraction wrestler, right? This is what WWE has in spades. This is the kind of person that even in 2025, whereas most people just pay attention to the brand, there are still a few people who can draw, right? Mm-hmm. You're John Cena. You put him on a show, it will draw.
He draws.
Brock Lesnar, like him or not, will draw. Roman Reigns, announced for the card, will draw. Yeah. Things like that, characters like that. AEW doesn't really have those.
Kenny Omega, I think is the only one.
And I don't even, I would argue he wouldn't even, is not like a quarter, on his own, is
that.
Not a draw.
I'd argue against that. I saw it in real time.
You show me some data that like him alone will give me 10,000 more people in an arena, I'll believe it, but I will not believe that until I see hard data.
Okay, no offense to
him,
that's fair.
But I think him, Will Ospreay, Swerve, Adam Page, FTR, all these as a unit,
a collection,
they're a very strong brand. So their spectacle, which is not always my favorite, is their, I think, blood and guts. It's death matches. It's what they dig into the pocket
what
of the
is their spectacle
matches.
And it's the diversity of their roster as well, I think, is kind of the, you know, the spectacle.
But that's not
of it,
that's
right?
not spectacle though. That adds to it.
But yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
So like their spectacle is the when they go wild, anarchy in the arena, like glass, they take that stuff to the extreme. Not always my favorite, but that's their spectacle.
Right.
But which doesn't always, which I think is a hitter, sometimes a risk and a hit or miss with whether it, does it draw more audience? Does it turn more people away? Stuff like that. Sure, but that is their part of their unique brand. Whereas if we turn our attention to the WWE side of things, especially in this buildup for War Games and everything like that, and John Cena's last year, they've dug deep into the attraction wrestler and the spectacle of just like, look at all the huge stars on Raw this week.
Yeah.
And look who showed up. And that's kind of it. Outside of a few exceptions.
To piggyback on that and to continue this segue, I feel like one of the biggest issues that people had for a long time with Tony Khan and how he booked matches was that it felt like a kid playing with action figures.
Mm.
Yep.
That it was just like, I like this guy and I like this guy. Week. So I'm going to put them in a match together. I like this guy and I like this person. I like
and then
this,
you wouldn't see
like
him
this
for 3 months.
And then you wouldn't see him for three or whatever. But it's just like, let's just mash them together and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Well, now AEW's had the benefit of time. They have built, as you mentioned earlier, GB, this lore that they can now rely on. Yeah.
They have their own
to
history.
To be able to tell better stories. Before, they kind of had to be like, let's just throw Kenny Omega and Cody Rhodes in a match together and just see what happens.
Great wrestlers and then
Whoever. Yeah. And like, let's just see what happens. And all right, well, we got to make belts and we got to have our own weird match types. And, you know, we got to have all this. So it was a matter of them building this up. And now that they have built it, they can settle down and focus more. And that's what AEW has done. But now WWE is in the business of building spectacle to make money.
Yeah.
To appease TKO.
Yeah.
Is how it
the
feels.
The goals are very different.
Right?
And people
very different.
People need to accept that.
And that's why this build to Survivor Series has felt so disjointed.
Yeah.
Because they have booked it the way that Tony Khan used to book things of, let's just get our biggest people and throw them all in a match.
Because
together.
Dude, even the War Games match that they're proposing, or the one that it looks like it's going to be, which is like the Vision plus Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul, and Brock Lesnar, if I'm understanding that right. Versus what? CM Punk, Cody Rhodes,
Jey
Uso, and what we have, Roman, and I'm guessing one more person. I don't know.
Well, who. it's both Usos, Cody, Usos. Punk, and Roman. Yeah,
I don't even know what's the point of this match, because like Seth's not here, so the Vision, that part of it kind of and look, this, I'm gonna give him a bone. I'm gonna throw a bone at them. Only because
Seth's injury may have
Seth very much is the glue of this entire situation, because he's the one who beat both of the men at WrestleMania with Paul Heyman's help. That started the Vision, that started the quest for him to get back to the top of the card and blah blah blah. But now that the Vision's turned on Seth, it kind of feels like, well, what the hell is the point? Why are you guys? I mean, if you just want the belt, then cool. I mean, I guess that makes sense. But then fight for the belt. Don't fight
but
in a war
only
games
one
match.
Of you can hold it.
And only one of you can hold it. So it doesn't. Yeah. That also doesn't compute. So I do agree, especially in that regard. I mean, even John Cena getting the Intercontinental Championship just felt like, you know what? Fuck
and
it.
Let me tell.
He has one spot left.
And see, that's my issue with the tournament now, is the whole John Cena tournament has just felt like a big, well, fuck it. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, let's bring people back. Let's get those one night pops for Zack Ryder and Dolph Ziggler.
And that's exactly it.
It's
fun and it's great. And it would have been great had there been these other slots open.
Yeah.
Like, for other people who need the involvement more than some of the people that are in the match. Like, sure. Again, like, I don't want to, like, there were so many people in this tournament already that you were just like, they're not gonna make it.
Yeah.
They're not going to make it. And then there's others where you're just like, that match doesn't interest me because I've seen it before, or I've seen it 100 times. Like, because Cena's already done his greatest hits, basically, it feels like it should be some new person. That's what we all expected and all wanted from this. But like, the people involved, I don't know. To me, it just really feels like This is all being done for one of two reasons. It's all being done either so Sheamus can win the IC title, or it's being done so Gunther can win.
Which, and at this point, I don't know if the match will be for the IC title anymore. Now that they Monday,
now that that's happened,
I think Dom's going to get it back.
I think he is too. So it feels like to me, the tournament feels a little telegraphed.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
And that's, there's no fun or joy in that for me. It just feels so slapdash, and it feels, the whole thing just feels like, I don't know. It's just so strange. It's like, if you were like, hey, we're going to have a tournament of Batman's greatest villains, and you get like Calendar Man, And you're like, why the fuck is Calendar Man in this tournament?
Oh, that's a good
Batman's
one.
Fought Calendar Man, sure. But yeah. Is anyone really like Calendar
that's Man's, the one I want.
Calendar Man's the guy. He's going to take it today.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't hit the same way.
No. So, like, if you have this incredible rogue of or this incredible rogue gallery of John Cena, why aren't they all not a what? Why isn't everybody that he's ever? Why isn't it? Why isn't CM Punk in it? Why isn't Randy Orton in it? Why isn't
AJ Styles?
Yeah. Like all the Miz? Why isn't the Miz? If you were going to do
the
that,
Miz wasn't it. The Miz wasn't.
Oh, yeah, the Miz was. He was. He's like right. Yeah. But I mean, like you know, so it's that's what. It just doesn't make any sense. He's already fought all these people. So give us something new or fresh. It just feels like, I don't know. Yeah. It just, the tournament was to me such a cool idea and they just botched it.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
I mean, so you want people in a tournament where you're like, any one of these people can win.
Yeah.
Any one of these people can win. And I don't feel that way about almost every person in this.
Yeah.
In this tournament.
So for the wrestlers who have advanced, it's Rusev, Sheamus, Jey Uso, LA Knight, Solo Sikoa, and Gunther. And then left on the docket, we have on Friday, we have a few more first round matches. We have two more, which is weird that they didn't announce them ahead of time. You would think that it would have been something, you know, more, but yeah, no, also, instead you got,
where's the bracket?
You got, I know, right? You got Carmelo Hayes versus Bronson Reed and then Penta versus Finn Balor. And I can't help but again, it kind of goes back to that, like Finn, if there's something there with the IC title and Finn or whatever, and like, you know, maybe there's, I'm actually okay with that. But again, it's not the most compelling. It's not the most like, sure. You know, it doesn't speak to me. So even when I see the last four competitors left over and we make the prediction of who wins, it'll be maybe Carmelo Hayes beats Bronson Reed because of some interference, right? He's got to. If he just loses this match, then what the hell are we doing with Carmelo Hayes, right? Like, really, what are we doing with the guy? And then Penta versus Finn Balor genuinely doesn't think it matters who wins because I don't think either one of those guys are going to be it. But let's just say for the sake of it all, it's going to be Penta. So you have Penta, probably Bronson Reed, Gunther, Solo, LA Knight, Jey Uso, Sheamus, and Rusev. Who from that list outside of Gunther?
That's my point. Is
really? And maybe LA Knight, maybe.
Right.
But for what? I don't know. Yeah. It's
when you just you had the opportunity, the ultimate thing, I think you're going to end up missing is what, how did Cena explode onto the scene?
Yeah.
Kurt Angle calling someone out. He was a young gun, slapped the piss out of Kurt Angle at ruthless aggression. Killed. Mm-hmm. So like go out. I'm like, how exciting if the tournament would have broken down.
It ends the way it
Carmelo
all
Hayes, Javon Evans.
Yes.
Like, you had like four or five of these people who were just like, who have not got Penta, whatever, just guys who had not exploded onto the scene yet.
But yes.
And they're all, any one of them could have been that next young guy to kick the door in of this generation. Yeah. And instead, I love everybody in this. Like, there's nothing taken away from the talent who are in the tournament and remaining in it. But like they've all done big things either with John in the past or like already they're already world champions or and I mean, it's just like
or they're already like shoe-in Hall of Famer. Like Sheamus don't need the rub. He's a Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned.
Multi-time world champion, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and in this
I think
instance,
there's a little bit of a
this is where it's like the spectacle is definitely gonna be there. You know, it's going to be John Cena's last match. It's going to look like a big deal, but you know, narratively, I could care so little for how this plays out. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Because like it was, I feel like you had one of two options with this tournament, either either you bring someone up that and just be like, this make is the somebody. Guy. This make somebody. You can either make somebody or you make a god. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you can sure. either make someone into a superhero or make them into a god. So well, is it, do you want like let's strap a rocket to this guy and see where he goes? Or do you want to get someone like Gunther and say, he's the new,
he was Roman. Already great. Now he's greater.
Now here's right. where I'm at with that though. Because now that we're in this situation where the tournament feels a little bit, you know, flat, and there's all this, you know, trickery with the IC title, it's like, I don't know if I care anymore. Like
about the tournament?
About even Gunther beating Cena, because Gunther's already awesome. Like, right. did you hear the pop for him? He used his old music
and his OG music.
He's back to his OG man, music. God. The crowd lost their shit. He doesn't need to be made in any way, shape, or form. To me, Gunther's right. already
yeah.
at that point. He's done. Like I'm. The reason why I'm always going to be a Gunther fan is because this guy came into it with a very unique style, a very straightforward approach. And also you could see just the amount of work that he had put in, not just for his physique, but also his in-ring work, his mic work, all this stuff. And then he makes the Intercontinental title, which is a thing that no one had been able to do up until that yep. point, already mm-hmm. established himself, then goes on to make the World Heavyweight title even bigger than mm-hmm. what it actually was. Seth had done it, but Gunther took it to another level. So it just feels like, does Gunther need to like face Cena in this last match to be a made man? I'd argue he already is.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's kind of serving yeah. no one at this point. it's the way that it comes off.
Why weren't people clamoring to be in this tournament either?
Yeah. Yeah, like we should have had backstage segments of people going.
Yes, it felt like
you know,
there was
yeah.
no like yeah, I just
it, instead they just
that,
announced
to me,
it
ups the prestige and like yeah. yeah, why aren't people being like, I want to be in the tournament, I want to yeah. be seen as last opponent, I want to whatever,
like,
knowing
and
for
I
what,
want
what
and
that
I want that to like
legacy.
Matter narratively, because one of my favorite things that AEW did was in the Casino Gauntlet Battle Royale, the first one that they did, I believe it was Roderick Strong was supposedly the next guy up after the match had ended. So he goes to the back. He yells at Christopher Daniels. He's like, I was in this match. I should have gotten a shot. I should have an opportunity. This is not fair. You know, I was literally about to go outside and then the match ended and so on and so forth. And they gave him a title shot. But it was like the match had mattered for him. And he went back and said, the rules of the match had prevented him from being able to achieve what he wanted to achieve. And thus he brought that back into the story. And then he was able to get a number one contenders match as a result of that. And then ipso facto, you know, right. so yeah. on and so forth. Right. But I wanted to see, you know, like Miz and Carmelo Hayes, right? Like going to the back and running after Pierce and being like, hey, I'm the guy who beat John Cena, you know, at WrestleMania. This is my protege. We both need to be in this tournament to prove that we belong, right? Like, give me that stuff. Give me those mm-hmm. bits. But instead, it was just, hey, guys, there's a tournament. And we're going to announce who's fighting who on social media. Because you all know that everyone yeah. loves social media. Everyone loves the positive experience that social media provides. And we want to use that positive experience to announce our tournament. I don't know. It was a little disappointing. I agree with you guys. That being said, though, there were a couple things that did happen. I didn't want to miss it just because it's important to kind of go back to that. We are, you know, War Games is pretty much in full effect. We're going to be seeing where the chips fall with that. We have the very weird teams coming together here. And even from a story perspective, that feels a little disjointed, right? But it's like, how do you feel about this team that Heyman's put together? Does it even make sense? Like, I guess it kind of does with Logan Paul, Matt, and Drew McIntyre And now Brock,
like, sure, like, but
Brock hated Paul.
Yeah. Again, I think Seth being injured threw a wrench in a lot of this. But
how do you explain it? Like, you're the writer. How do you explain Brock Lesnar rejoining Paul Heyman after pretty much ignoring and feuding with him for like the better part of like the tail end of his last run?
I mean, you can easily throw it away with one of my favorite things is it's family's fight, right? He's my brother. We had a falling out, but we've come together. You know, I'll always be a Paul Heyman guy. And because he had to be fair, he's been gone, I think, long enough since like the Roman feud, the stuff where it's not like it happened, 4 months ago.
Yeah.
We're a couple of years after it. So I can forgive that a little bit. Brock is a quintessential Paul Heyman guy. So Logan is the weird outlier. Clearly that was supposed to be Seth, I think. Mm-hmm. So it was basically the Vision plus Brock.
Yeah.
And who's, Logan, for better or for worse, is one of the probably most despised bad guys that they have. So I get it on paper, but this goes back to the point. And, again, it's just this match is all going to be all about spectacle. Let's just put top guys. Let's just throw all the top guys in there. And let's see what works out. Let's see what falls out.
Yeah,
I mean, before he comes back to fight Cena at WrestlePalooza, who were his last three opponents? Well, not last three opponents. His last three matches were with Cody Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it could be a simple match of or simple thing of, hey, Brock, you want to get your hands on Cody? Cool. Here you go.
Yeah,
I think.
That one, though, wasn't it like Brock, like, just wanted to see if Cody was capable, right? They shook hands at the end of that, which is why, or it's just that he hates Roman more than anything, right? And that could maybe be the case. And
he didn't know Roman was going to be in the match at the time.
That's true. That's very true. Because then Roman showed up when Brock came out. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make sense either. That's what I'm saying. It's like,
I know.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Not, it just doesn't, mm-hmm. It's not gripping me. I genuinely, and I don't mean this to, because we try to talk about everything on this show, but I have been struggling to care about the WWE storylines. They have,
because there's not any.
Gunther's in a match. I'm watching it. That Gunther-Javon Evan match, amazing. Loved it. Every second of it was a fantastic match. Mm-hmm. Javon Evans at Kids of Future.
That's the other thing. Why are they in the first fucking round? Why are they in the first round fighting each other?
What a third
round match or something
that exactly. Why isn't that the finals?
No kidding.
It's honestly perplexing. And if the finals ends up being like Sheamus versus Gunther, I'm not like
it'll be good. I'm sure it will be a very quality match.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll beat the shit out of each other and it'll be entertaining.
But like if this ends up with Dom winning the IC title back at Survivor Series, like I will actually be very bothered by that, because then it's like, okay, you just gave him the belt so he could be a Grand Slam champion. That's cool. Yep.
Yes.
But like,
they just gave him the belt so he could be the Unseen 17.
To me, that just loses the essence of it. I don't know why. It doesn't feel like it matters.
It's like we live in this bizarro universe where we just need to get through Cena's retirement and then things can return to normal.
Which is crazy because it's John Cena and they had a plan honestly, that I think is what really screwed everything up was just the negative reaction to Cena's heel turn and I wouldn't even say it was negative because he turned heel. It was just negative because he turned heel and it went nowhere. That was the problem. So interesting places that we find our three major North American promotions in right now. If you would have told me coming out of WrestleMania 40 that WWE would be directionless just a few years later, I would have told you were insane. Because I'm like, there's just no world that Triple H doesn't have a plan. But it just feels like with
Because I really feel like WWE is just throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks.
Well, and also the injuries
too. The injuries, yeah, but
they
like
can't control that.
What moves the needle so that people will pay $500 for nosebleed tickets? That's what it feels like WWE is that feels that like that's their true. Booking process right now.
Yeah.
And that's disappointing.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't that. But then they sold it to TKO and it's like, well, now there's certain expectations of us from our parent company that we have to fulfill.
Yeah.
And that's affecting booking. Hot take. And that's affecting the product.
Hot take is WWE in their Turner WCW era right now.
Feels a little bit like it.
Okay. I thought it was crazy because the thing is you got a lot of older guys, right? That are at the top of the card. You have a talented mid card, but yet nothing's really happening right now in that realm, right? And you're really just focusing on big moments rather than, you know, like I always think back to like Goldberg's run, right? And how they had him win the world title on just a random episode of Nitro. You know, and not that it was like random. I mean, it was in Atlanta, Georgia. It was basically a pay-per-view that they had sold out for that event. That
yeah.
But it was so like the spectacle was so much more important than like what actually happened. And then coming out of that, they were like so spectacle-pilled that they needed to get the belt off of Goldberg. And then how do they do it? They tased him. You know, like that was the only options that they had. It does kind of feel like that's where they are right now.
Yeah.
Matt, you said not really.
I agree. Yeah. I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, sorry. No.
They're binge drinking where if you just drink a little bit, you just stay drunk all the time.
Yeah, right. And then, and also too, I can't help but like, I feel like this picture exemplifies what's going on in WWE perfectly right now. You have this CM Punk Roman Reigns thing that's been festering in the wings for God knows how long, but neither one of them have been bad guys. So there's been no real opportunity for them to cross paths. And then in the background, it's just Cody. Mm-hmm. The world champion is in the background. Yeah.
Who was kind of positioned as your new face of the company a year, you know, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
He's just in the background of this shot.
Last few months, that's kind of what it's felt like.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. We want to know what you guys think, though. Let us know in the comments down below. Do you agree? Do you agree with our assessment on who is really like spectacle versus story? Who's focusing on what? Where things go? Where would you like to see things go? Right? We'd love to hear from you. We'll read your comments on the show. We'll react to them. We'll talk about them in real time because I'm curious. If other people see kind of what we're seeing in this space right now, where it is very like, it's very odd, you know, very, very odd positions. Yeah. TNA really shooting their shot in more ways than one. AEW being the home of consistency, but yet lacking in that like big, big draw appeal that you have with the likes of CM Punk, which they had, by the way, with CM Punk, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Brock Lesnar. Do you like what AEW is doing? Focusing more on like the story and building up their stars organically and maybe a little slowly or, you know, would you prefer to see some big names? This is a good topic. This is a good discussion. Not gonna lie. Kind of dug it. That, of course, is going to bring us to the end of the show and what we like to call the greatest segment of all time. It is a Reebok 24/7 Champion of the Week. This is, of course, where we talk about the person, place, or thing. Doesn't matter what it is that brought us joy this week. Last week, who did we give it to? Do we remember who we gave it to last week?
Wasn't it you?
Oh, it was me.
Yeah.
I won because
it was your birthday was the weekend before.
That's right. Yeah. It was my birthday. But this week it's no longer my birthday. So we must come up with a new one. Damn, I'm trying to think. You know, I will give mine just off the rip because I was in New York, went back home, my people. It was amazing. Firstly, do want to give a shout out to all the New Yorkers who showed up to the Red Bull home ground event with signs for Zoran Mamdani. That was honestly kind of trippy. It was like cool. When Zoran showing up, or I came here for Zoran. It was actually kind of cool, but it wasn't advertised, by the way. The thing that I loved more so was Joe's Pizza. Joe's Pizza in they open up a new one at 42nd Street. In case you guys don't know Joe's Pizza, you may have seen Joe in a small independent film did by a small independent media company called Sony that they had in Spider-Man, where young Tobey Maguire, aka Peter Parker, was a delivery man for a pizzeria in New York. That pizzeria was Joe's Pizzeria, which is a famous pizzeria all throughout the city. They just opened up a new location, 42nd Street. Oh, my God. I had three slices. I hadn't had pizza that good in years. It's just so, oh, man, just so good. Anyway, so mine is Joe's Pizza, the new location, 42nd Street. And if you go to New York City, make it a point to go to Joe's Pizza. I guarantee you won't be disappointed. That's mine. Okay. Yeah, it's a New York institution.
I wish I knew that before I went to New York.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's crazy. I completely forgot.
I did have some absolutely banging pizza.
To be fair, you can get good pizza anywhere in New York. Like, there's Highline Pizza off of the Highline, which is one of my favorite pizzerias. There's Nick's in the Bronx, which is another great spot. Like, there's tons. I mean, you could go for miles.
Baked by Luigi. That's where I went.
Yeah, that's right. Baked by Luigi.
Baked by Luigi was so good.
Another banger spot. Spumoni Gardens.
It was so good, I had to take my shirt off to eat the rest of it.
Oh, that's amazing.
I just was like, I just gotta. You got like, I'm like sweating from the excitement. Yeah,
I agree. It's just pizza in general. It's just the best. It's so good.
I think I just want to order pizza. Now.
Just want pizza. Yeah.
At 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
All right. What about for you guys? Who wants to go next?
I'll go next. I thought I would kind of go with our. I mean, we got War Games coming up, so I thought I would go with something kind of related to that. Though I do want to mention, because you just talked about New York City, and you know, we were talking about Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes assaulted NYPD police officers.
That's true.
At Madison Square Garden. That's Mamdani's New York. This is Mamdani's New York. We're assaulting police officers
with
kendo sticks. So my 24/7, I wanted to go something kind of war themed. For War Games. So my 24/7 champion is a movie on Netflix called A House of Dynamite.
Ooh.
Have you seen this yet?
I've heard about it though. I heard it was very good.
Directed by Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, who,
the Hurt Locker. Yeah,
oh, Anthony Ramos is in it.
Yeah. So yeah, Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty. Rebecca Ferguson's in it. Idris Elba is in it. Jared Harris, Tracy Lett. Like, it's unbelievable. The premise is, it is about the steps and processes that stand between us and total nuclear annihilation.
Damn.
The screenwriter talked to people who actually worked at like NORAD all these other places who like know these processes and the goings on of what would happen. It is harrowing.
Yeah. Noah Oppenheim, by the way, is the writer.
Noah Oppenheim. Yeah. It's harrowing to watch.
Yeah.
Because it's like you watch it and you're like, oh my God, the world could change in 17 minutes and we would have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's segmented. It goes from just before an unidentified ICBM is launched up until impact. And it tells it in like three different segments, all told from different perspectives.
Wow.
And it's terrifying, And it's like, I mean, it's really good, but it is terrifying.
Rebecca Ferguson is in it. And that's all you need to know. She's like one of the best actors on the planet right now.
Absolutely. Idris Elba plays the president.
Oh, perfect.
And let me tell you, like when you watch it and you're just like I said, I have kind of chills thinking about it, because especially when you realize that Idris Elba is not our president, it makes it that much more terrifying.
Which also, if you want a fun,
it is so good. It's so, so good.
And if you want a fun one, so that this way you can kind of, you know, forget about the existential dread that we all live under. Idris Elba was playing the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom alongside President John Cena in a movie called Heads of State, which was honestly a fun time.
I heard it was fun.
It was a super fun movie.
Goofy, fun.
Yeah. Goofy, exactly. So, you know, a little juxtaposition, if you will, a little difference between the two, if you want to have a little bit of a happier time.
That's a palate cleanser.
Yeah,
sure.
Definitely a palate cleanser. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, but perfect.
House of Dynamite. Man, Catherine Bigelow can make a hell of a movie.
Yeah.
It's
Hurt Locker, it's right? Really, that was the Hurt Locker director.
Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Also, Noah Oppenheim wrote Jackie, the Jackie Kennedy movie with Natalie Portman. So, pretty cool.
Yeah,
I just looked it up and was like,
he's primarily a reporter, like a journalist.
That's cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
Good on him. Did what Ben Shapiro can never do. All right.
Matt. Please wife.
Yeah, anyway. And that too.
Well, really quick, when Jake said it was about war, I thought it was going to be about the screwdriver that nearly defeated Pete Hegseth when he was screwing in the new sign in Washington. Man had to roll his sleeves all the way up to turn a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Listen, that's
separated weird for a man from manual so labor. Used to having screwdrivers, you know
it's
what I mean?
True. The performative garbage from these people is always just cracking me up.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
But mine, it was so I was in Orlando for TNA tapings, 3 days in a row, long weekend, but then my wife flew down and met me, and we did one of our favorite things. We went to the old Disney World, and when we did, we went to Epcot on Monday, and I did post a picture on that same day. We got to see the Beach Boys doing their, you know, the end of the summer concert series or whatever with John Stamos.
Oh, my God.
Of all people. They were there Saturday or Sunday and Monday, and we were there Monday. It was a madhouse around concert time. So we didn't stick around too long, but we're like, they still sound good.
Yeah.
I'll give it to them. Cause even like we tried to get a little view, but then we used the distraction to go like ride stuff for a little bit, but we caught a little bit of it and we heard it and like, man, Beach Boys is still going strong. They sounded really good. So
God, John Stamos is so freaking good looking.
I didn't hear it, but I did hear that. I don't know. One of the nights, they did do Forever from Jesse and the Rippers from Full House. They did a rendition as well.
Oh, so, that's
amazing.
Mine is, John Stamos and the Beach Boys.
John Stamos and the Beach
killing
Boys.
Killing it out there.
What an incredibly random but awesome thing.
That is,
I kind of want to give it to John Stamos and the Beach Boys, man. Keep ripping it, man.
Let's give it to John Stamos.
I'm
going to
give it to them.
Boys.
Guys, keep kicking all the butts. You know, it's always good. Actually,
the New York pizza of performers.
Exactly, exactly.
The always satisfying.
Always performers. I just recently, a quick aside, watched a video from Neil deGrasse Tyson where he was talking about getting older and, you know, it's just my 38th birthday and obviously it's still my 30s. So I'm very blessed and grateful for another year of life on this planet. But, you know, it was a cool video where he was talking about how, like, you know, we shouldn't be looking at getting older as a bad thing. You know, we should be looking at that as opportunities to seek more knowledge, seek more wisdom, and to continue to make ourselves into better people and to continue to find new ways to enjoy our life. Jake, yes. So when I see the Beach Boys and I see John Stamos still, you know, having fun, doing something they enjoy and people enjoying the things that they're doing, that's a beautiful thing. So something we should be happy about. So, folks, that's going to do it for our show today. We thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you for the support. Make sure you join our Discord if you haven't had a chance to do so. Always open to feedback, always open to things, you know, other ways, and we can improve the show. We didn't go into predictions for full gear, even though we know it's this weekend. And the reason why is because, look, we'll talk about the show, but, you know, we don't need to give our preds for everything. We'll save it for the big shows. We'll save it for the really, really big shows. We'll definitely do it for World's End. So don't worry about that. We'll definitely do it for Survivor Series. It's one of the four pay-per-views, right? And we'll certainly do it for TNA's first big show, first big pay-per-view.
Genesis.
Genesis, yep. Which will be coming up next year, right? I think that'll be in 26.
Yeah, that'd be mid-January.
Yeah, yep. So don't worry. We'll be doing preds for pay-per-views, but for like full gear wasn't that necessary. But I'll tell you what, though. Let us know who you think is going to win in the comments down below, which match you're excited for, and where you think the chips are going to fall. We would love to hear from you, and we will talk about it next week right here on Rebook. Thank you all so much for watching. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff, and we'll see you soon. Peace.
I gotta go find some pizza.